My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs Quarterly Dispatch Cleanup Baby Q2.
Roundup. Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. Howdy.
Usually I'm the howdy. We're the sheriffs of reading your questions.
I'm the sheriff of sucking you off.
Oh,
I'm
good for you.
Suck you off. never done it before. There's always a first.
Hey, you know, it's a big wide world we live in, you know?
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw indeed, partner. Oh man, never say never. But yeah, we have too many questions. We got surplus questions that are roaming around the prairie and we need to round them up. And that is what we're fixing to do. Yeehaw.
Pull up a bean and enjoy a camp spur. It's time for questions.
Yeah.
Let's go. Chris Hales, this partner, says, I really enjoyed The Last of Us, but still haven't played the sequel as I found the discourse around it so exhausting that it just killed all my interest in it. Has the discourse surrounding a game ever put you off of playing it?
I mean, it's probably colored the way that I went in because you end up being braced for all different kinds of stuff, depending on just kind of what kind of horseshit has been around, you know, but like usually when I start playing a game, it is so far beyond when it came out. And by that, I mean, like even just a couple of months, that's usually good enough to get you past the dipshit discourse, you know?
Yeah, there's capital D discourse, which is obnoxious, and then there's discourse that just is how you hear about games before you play them.
Yeah,
you know, so like tons of stuff around The Last of Us 2 discourse put me off it, but it wasn't because of controversial stuff. It was just people were like, "Oh, it's a Naughty Dog game, but it's like 30 hours long."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's gonna put me off." Like I would rather choose for myself whatever the controversy is. I've done a bunch of those and found sometimes them to be overblown.
Yeah.
You know, like the capital D discourse around like say God of War 2016, I think is largely subtractive and irritating.
Yeah.
And does not reflect on the game very much. You know, but if that discourse had been like, yeah, it's 80 hours, like I would have been like, okay, you know, there's a difference between like discourse and just stuff about the game.
I have my own kind of red flags about what's going to like put me off of something. Like, I guess technically the answer around this will be like, if it's a game where I know like a major person or the studio involved is just real chuddy.
That's the only thing for me. Like, basically like whatever that boomer shooter was that looked real cool.
Oh,
mall.
I don't want to say the wrong one because I don't want to, accidentally poison somebody against a good boomer shooter. I can't remember. Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about though, right?
Yes,
like that guy turned out to hide like Gamergate messages in his game, stuff like that. I'm like, I'm good. That is what will put me off.
But that's, you know, simultaneously not wanting to give money to a person, and also like if it's for a show, like if it's just for myself, I can play it and not talk about it, which is fine. If it's for a show though, I don't want to feature it because that's also directing attention to them. You know?
Yes.
So it ends up being just one of those things, but that's not a consideration that everybody has. So.
Yeah.
No. Nope. Chase writes, as someone who primarily uses y'all's show to vicariously experience games I will likely never play. And
this is the lingo, cowpoke. they know that we were gonna
that is some rootin' tootin' vernacular you got there, pard.
You got yourself a ye old Old West vernacular.
gonna sidle back up to the brass rail here and continue saying, as someone who primarily uses y'all show to vicariously experience games I will likely never play and see what they may have had to offer to me, I'm curious, because since games are such an interactive medium for art, what are your thoughts on those experiences I'm missing out on? Can the messages and art of the game come across without playing? But if so, at what cost? At what cost, Gary?
At what cost?
I certainly think so, because of my deep fascination with the ideas put on display by Soma or Pathologic. Yet I have little intention to ever play these games to feel these ideas through interactivity. An episode of WAF or a video essay deep dive will usually work for me. Am I and others like me missing something? And if so, how much is that something worth in the grander scheme? I'm going to answer that with a big old depends, cowpoke.
Yeah. Hey, how cowpoke? Yes, I think that you're undeniably probably missing something, but that the importance of that is going to vary so much.
It just depends on what you value in playing games and stuff. You know, sometimes the cool thing about the game is the, you know, like the idea, the hook that can be summarized. Sometimes that hook is bolstered or I think entirely informed by the play. You know, I just, it really is situational.
Well, and you're missing out on those positive things. You're also missing out on cost.
Yes.
Right. So something like a Pathologic, which is a game I have a lot of affection for, but can be extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
To play, you're also not paying that frustration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a mixed kind of thing. And like I've said a million times, the choice isn't between the ideal experience and, you know, like you're getting a compromise experience. It's not a choice between the ideal experience and a compromise experience. It's probably the choice between a compromise experience and no experience.
Yeah.
You're still able to glean those cool bits.
Yeah.
So I have no problem with this. Like I do this all the time, especially for old hateful NES and Super Nintendo games.
It's one of
them. I've always been curious about.
It's one of the main values of those reference books that we like so much. You know, yes. I'm probably never going to play all the Space Quest games. You know, I've played the ones that I have, but I'm not going to go back and play like 1 and 2. Right. Yeah. But like you read about it and you know, like you vaguely in the back of your head, even if you can't cite it chapter and verse, it's like, oh, that's the one that X. It's just kind of part of broadening your, you know, understanding of what's been done and other stuff. So you can react to other things, you know, with a little bit more of a catalog.
Yeah. So I think it's fine personally. You go with God, cowpoke.
Yep.
Rob Rootentoots, what are some of your favorite classes and or class systems in games? I'm partial to casting classes in the original EverQuest, which are super well defined with flavor and utility spells. Also a fan of Baldur's Gate 2, 6 party slots made for endless combinations, and class-specific quests and strongholds flesh things out nicely.
Both of those are really good examples. Man, EverQuest handled casting classes really well.
I wish EverQuest didn't look like EverQuest. Like it's got a, like even as, you know, I understand that I'm not trying to shit on something that was important to you, but it does have a very kind of generic vibe to it. Like whenever I saw the cover of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You kind of have to look past that because there is cool stuff that happens. Yeah.
It just doesn't put it out on Front Street with like the scantily clad elf woman.
Yeah.
That's on the cover of everything.
Excuse me. I think you mean the high elf princess for Iona Vi. Yeah.
That's exactly what I meant, cowpoke. you got me. I don't, because whenever I hear something that sounds cool about EverQuest, I'm like, yeah, no, but I, you know, the time has passed and the reason why is because it had the high elf princess. What's her head on the cover?
Yeah. Hey man, I said it once. If you don't remember it, them's fighting words.
High-end Furliana? Fur's in there.
Yeah, Furiona Vi. Yeah.
Furiona, that's pretty close.
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah. Shoot me in the knee.
make you crawl through the desert. Yeah.
Yeah. Compromise.
But no, just they like the there were lots of quests, but they generally broke down on a couple of different lines, damage caster support, summon stuff like that, and different combinations. It was neat. I mean, Baldur's Gate, I think the big thing there is less that it, because it's just D&D classes, D&D 2E. Mm-hmm. It's that you have those six slots, right?
Building a party makes a big difference.
Yeah.
In this kind of thing. I was like talking on Twitter today because, Fel Seal Arbiter's Mark, a game I have a lot of affection for, went on sale. Hmm. And it is a Final Fantasy Tactics like that actually tries to be like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Right.
By emulating the job system, mm-hmm. And the abilities and everything, you're making a team and you're covering up those strengths and weaknesses. That's really important.
Yes.
To me, it's the thing that is missing in other tactics games. So it's like what Fire Emblem has no interest in.
Yes.
For example. And also modern, you know, my understanding of like triangle strategy is that they replace that, mm-hmm. with just having a lot of characters that have specialties, and your choice is only in which character you put in the party, not crafting them.
Yes.
I basically want as much possible control over this. Mm-hmm. There's not a ceiling on complexity for this for me. So like, mm-hmm. Final Fantasy Tactics or Divinity Original Sin, I want really granular control over building a party of people with varied abilities and specialties. Yeah. I think that's really fun and compelling.
This is why I think respecs are really important, because I want as much of that complexity as I can, and I want to be able to make mistakes, you know?
Yes.
And, you know, because you're not going to be going into every game with perfect information, and I want to be able to roll with those mistakes if possible.
Yeah, same. Yeah. You know, I do want to be able to experiment, but I just really want there to be some real satisfying crunch to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I do not like the turning the interactivity dial down,
yeah.
school of game design, mm-hmm. very much.
Yeah, no, that's one of the few places where I think reduction is not additive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dan writes, I'm playing Nier for the first time through the remaster and listening to the WAF episodes alongside it. One thing that made me laugh, is when you got to the time skip, Gary said something to the effect of, at least we never have to go to the seaside town again. Can I just recommend that you never, ever cover the remake? Because not only do they add a main quest that takes you back to Seafront after the time skip, but they take away your fast travel boat, so you can't even just fast travel there. Not only that, but I can only assume that you have to do it again in Route B, since it happened after Emil's transformation. I'm only just starting Route B, so I can't confirm this either way. In all seriousness, I know you guys aren't going to cover this game anyway. I just wanted to know what you guys thought about it. Didn't take long enough to travel to Seafront as a problem that needed solving in the original Nier. I'm generally enjoying the game itself, but then the game I played just before this was about 70 hours getting to the end of Sekiro. So it's nice to cut through enemies like butter for a change. That sounds god awful.
Yeah, I don't. What a cool set of games that guy likes to make. What a genius. Let's do things that are counterintuitive and crappy, so weird sickos will think that that's super genius.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's harsh, but like, it is just this weird thing where I feel like anything that guy does gets gerrymandered into being brilliant, mm-hmm. no matter what it is. Like, somebody out there is, that's their favorite choice in the world, mm-hmm. that they took away that fast travel.
Yeah.
Yeah, drives me nuts.
It's an auteur problem to kind of a degree. I think that there's a honeymoon period kind of thing that happens with it, which is people who benefit from those kind of rounding up kind of deals, like, oh, this decision must mean something really good. You know, they get that benefit of the doubt, don't often get it for long. You know, look at somebody similar like Suda 51, right? Universal praise up through Killer 7. And then, you know, like, maybe No My Hero's caught a little bit more of that. But like, you know, how many think pieces have you seen about Killer is Dead?
Yeah. Yeah. Fewer than you would think. Yeah. Like, people do, I think, eventually kind of come around on that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why Yoko Taro largely avoided that is because he paired up with game designers for Automata.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and just had, which I, you know, got to hand it to him, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, as much as like, I haven't played that game, every time someone suggests it, it's another year. Mm-hmm. I'm right now looking to play it when I'm about 61.
Cool.
So I got that planned. Well, if you're looking to hang out when I'm 61, I'm busy for a couple weeks.
Some of the themes would resonate better in that situation, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I will get over my aversion to looking up a robot's butt for 60 hours by then. Yeah. By then I will welcome it as a release from hunting rats in the sewers for food.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like I, you know, good, it's a good idea to have somebody else be in charge of that stuff, I think.
Yes.
And just concentrate on your thematic stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 And choice.
I would say be real careful what you praise creators for, because you're casting a vote.
Yeah. They will double down on anything that, you know, you go nuts on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I thought about that game in a minute. I never think about that except for when somebody brings it up.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't occupy any headspace. I'm not blaming Dan for that, obviously.
Yeah.
But it just kind of like, I just kind of get drawn back into this rush. It's like when Homer eats the McRib. I get this like rush of.
We just see your cells start multiplying.
Just feeling like it activates me. I start hulking out. Thinking about that guy. Trevor says, are you familiar with any gaming news review sites that offer solid coverage on mobile games in particular? One of my go-to mobile games is ending in a few months, and I'd like to find a site that does more than just announce the existence of games. One with a strong critical viewpoint would be even better. Alternatively, if that question is too off topic, what gaming-related sites do you find yourself heading towards for critical reviews, not just feature reviews?
Sometimes I will go to Touch Arcade if I'm looking for a new mobile game to try out. And I am not, I didn't see anything cool or intriguing on, say, Apple Arcade or just the App Store in general, but that's about as far as my knowledge of mobile game coverage in particular goes.
It just, for me too, and it just comes up on Google.
Yeah.
I don't have a site I cruise for that stuff. It'd be cool. There's a hole for that because even Touch Arcade is like pretty breathless.
Yeah.
It's got like Nintendo Power.
Mm-hmm.
Feelings to it where it's like, you know, the lowest score ever, a 7 out of 10, you know, kind of thing, like Homer as the critic, food critic.
Yeah.
And then in terms of general game sites, none really. Mm-hmm. I will browse like a Kotaku and a Polygon and a Waypoint if I'm just browsing the internet, but I've fallen out of love with like a lot of review sites, even though there's good stuff that happens on several of them.
Yeah.
I just let that stuff get surfaced for me on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, rather than like cruise a site.
I've had a big joystick shaped hole in my heart ever since that site closed down. That used to become my main, just like, oh yeah, I'll just go there and rely on these folks. Ever since that went away, it's been more just kind of just assembling a raft, out of the best parts of any site that I, you know to go to.
Yeah. Same with me, but for 1UP. So yeah. I've been heard for a long time.
Well, yeah, 1UP, obviously 1UP. Yeah, I guess I was thinking the joystick is where I went after. It was where I went after 1UP.
There was a man without a country sense.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Nick writes 2 questions. Will there ever be another Duckfest? God willing. The recent. Maine. The recent Maine dispatch where we talked about not doing PRGE and some of our thoughts on there, just because, you know, pretty much the same for Duckfest, right?
Yeah, obviously. Like we'd love to.
Yes.
And I can say with 100% certainty there'll be another digital one. I would much rather do a physical one. I just want there not to be a body count.
Yes.
We're still waiting on that. We still live in hell.
Yep.
It's pandemic garbage times. You know, things have loosened up a little bit, but not enough. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, when I look at the numbers, it's like, nope, still concerning. Nick continues saying, I'm a mental health counselor in training, and I have been researching how gaming, everything from D&D to video games, can create positive mental health. You two talk a lot about mental illness. I'm just curious if you have thoughts or stories about how gaming has helped your mental health in the past. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about this a little bit. The weird thing, and this is going to sound dour, and I don't mean it to, but I tend to think of it when I think about gaming and mental health, it tends to be through like a more negative lens. Like, I've reinstalled The Sims because I'm depressed. Yeah. And it like helps, but it is a canary in a coal mine kind of thing that I'm like, oh, I'm going back to this comfortable, mindless thing because I cannot be challenged in any way.
It's like, oh, I know what this means. Shit.
Yeah. You know, and so I guess it does help in that respect, in that it's something just very familiar and low barred entry.
Yeah.
You know,
my thoughts about this are going to be so general as to be basically useless. You know, playing games is just something that you do for yourself and therefore falls in line with, you know, taking time to read or taking time to watch something for fun, not just to like zone out, you know. And it doesn't have to be just media consumption, but I think that broadly anything that you take time for to do just for you and not for something else will be, you know, good for you in measure. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the job obviously complicates that.
Yeah.
You know, with regards to video games,
mm-hmm.
but, generally it's something that is, a balm that can maybe get me through a period of mental weather, not something that directly, like, it's like an umbrella. It's not a weather control device.
Right.
You know, if that makes sense for the metaphor.
Yeah, no, that's pretty good. Like, it's all that I've, it won't turn off the rain, but it'll stop me from getting wet for a little while if I don't move too fast. Yeah.
Yeah. Or even incredibly wet. Like, it's like a rain jacket.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm still going to get pretty wet.
Yeah. Absolutely. But, sometimes you just have to disappear into a dungeon train for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Andrew says, I just finished Gris last week, or Gree, I'm not sure, and thought, wow, that was a perfect game. Are there any games that you consider to be perfect or near perfect in what they are trying to accomplish or artistically express?
That's tough, because perfect complicates it.
Yeah, I don't, perfect is not really, it's very hard.
That's not operative. Yeah.
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 You know, they're definitely like, I will finish a game and be like, that did its job.
Yes.
You know, and you couldn't add, like, perfect in a non-qualitative sense, in a, you could add nothing or subtract nothing
mm-hmm.
sense. That happens from time to time. I think that the last time that happened for me was probably like a short hike.
Okay.
It tends to be games with, you know, modest, if you know, still very valid, but like kind of modest goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the idea of that game is to run around as a bird and like check out a mountain,
mm-hmm.
explore a little bit,
yeah,
for an hour, and it did that perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, but even like things don't, when they have kind of greater goals than that, I think perfection gets much harder. Like Teardown has moments of perfection,
mm-hmm.
where it's exactly what it needs to be.
Yeah.
But then it also has some like pacing concerns, and there are some weird balance issues and frustrating missions and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of things that get close, but pretty rare that I'm like, this is absolutely, you know, no notes.
Yeah. And it's real tough, because some of the games that we heap so much praise on, you know, tend to be kind of novel-esque. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Disco Elysium, Planescape Torment, Pathologic. I would like lump all of these in and say, like, these leave such an impression that they're basically your go-to answers on dispatch responses for the rest of time. Mm-hmm. You know, but even those, like, perfect as defined by, you could take nothing away from this and it would still be the same. No, there's editing that could be done. Like, there's a lot to them, you know.
Yeah, Disco Elysium is pretty close for me.
Yeah.
There's not a lot I would be like, this should be removed. There's no like cursed dungeon.
There's very little that is like pulling against the main thrust of that game. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that actually might be the closest that I can think of for something that is like a big game.
Yeah.
That's very close.
Mm-hmm.
Gone Home is pretty perfect.
Yeah.
For what it's trying to do. That's closer to the short hike.
Mm-hmm.
Pile, but that's pretty perfect. Stanley Parable is pretty perfect.
Yeah.
For what's trying to do. Like, there's a lot of short kind of art game statements that I think are pretty close.
Yeah.
The Beginner's Guide, I think, is pretty perfect.
Mm-hmm.
For what it's trying to do. Like, real close.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of things that approach it.
Agreed.
No.
Let's see here. Do we want to do one more of these before we go to the topic ideas?
That sounds great.
Yeah. Let's see. I'll pick up here with Jeremy. The first one is, so they had two questions. The first one is, kind of just generally about, gaming for health in general. I think that relates to the mental health question that we answered before just a little bit too much, but there's a side question, saying guilty pleasures of books, movies, games, comics that you love, but recognize are quote bad.
Sure. Yeah. I do. I mean, bad is hard, mm-hmm. you know, like there's little nutritional value to Cutthroat Kitchen, but I still love it.
Yeah.
Like I will watch that.
Ironically.
Yeah. Yeah. We, you know, and I just watched I stalled out on it for a long time because me and my girlfriend started watching What We Do in the Shadows. But
oh, yeah.
I got to the Halloween episode where Sarah Majumdar dresses up as Princess Leia as a costume. And I'm just like, yeah, this is no notes.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, and he comes down and there's no, he's right to business. It doesn't matter what he's doing. Like that whole time, Elton Brown pretends to be Dr. Evil. For several days, like they shoot that over a couple days. Uh-huh. And I know that you're not supposed to talk to Elton Brown when he's not talking to you.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the rules they have on that show. So you come in there and then he comes out and just does this bit, this little like one person comedy show for you for 2 days. And then Samuel Jumdar comes down dressed as Princess Leia and is like, no jokes about this. We need to know whether this tastes like a pasty, whether it reminds me of a pasty, and just like immediately gets down to business with his like unblinking, unknowing stare. It's not good, but I love it.
Yeah.
Know? It's real dumb.
Yeah. I just, the Cutthroat Kitchen is probably my favorite of things like that. But it generally, you know, reality TV kind of stuff. Like I go to bat for Shark Tank and specifically Dragon's Den, the Canadian version. Mm-hmm. Just because you get to see just some real weirdos, which is fun. And they're weirdos with enough money to try and start a business. So you don't feel too bad laughing at them.
Have you done a dive to see what other countries are they all named after different mythological creatures? Like I understand a shark isn't mythological, but in like Venezuela, is it like the Phoenix's Gambit? And then in you know, like Germany, it's like Manticore's Risk and stuff like that.
Manticore's Risk.
Into the cave of Grumlock. That kind of thing.
You know, I've not looked at it. I know that, oh boy, here's what Shark Tank looks like in 9 different countries. What do we have? So Canada's Dragon's Den. England is Dragon's Den too. That's where it is. The Czech Republic calls it Den D. Let's see here. Oh yes. In Finland, it's the Lion's Jaws.
Yes.
Yes.
I just really, I want them all to be a version of that.
Yeah. Japan.
The Cyclops' Promise.
Japan calls it Money Tigers, which is pretty good.
Money Tigers is quite good. It reminds me of that Tim and Eric, Money Boy, Celebrity Zillions thing.
Reload. Oh man. Yeah, that is the only article that I have found on it for international versions.
Another thing that I've been thinking a lot about that's bad is American Theft 80s just came out, is the sequel to Thief Simulator, and it is a bad version of what would be the perfect video game to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is bad.
Yeah.
I love those games. They're really janky and frustrating in some ways.
Yeah.
They're just also, you know, really perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like I love paying a corrupt cop for some intel. And then the intel is like, hey, the wife's on the can from 3 a.m. to 1 p.m.
You're a real weird cop.
And there's one of you in every pawn shop in this little town. It's so funny. It's real goofy. But still there's something there that is very compelling to me.
I mean, just you could probably lump a lot of simulators in there with that. Like,
yes.
Like, is House Flipper an amazing game? I mean, arguably, but like guilty pleasure sometimes comes down to you know, finding a functional definition of that is hard, especially personally, because like I don't differentiate between things that I enjoy for good reasons, things I enjoy for bad reasons. I just kind of enjoy it.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like I will have that recognition where I'm like, this is pretty dumb.
Yeah.
But I'm still, you know, if it was really dumb, if I really felt like that, I would probably stop. If there is, you know, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing drawing me forward.
Like, there were some Mumford and Sons songs that I was like, okay, this is fine. You know, like, but it comes down to, like, would I recommend this to somebody or not? Like, I wouldn't tell somebody, like, you know, Run to the Hilltops and say Lawnmower Simulator is really good and everybody should play it. But like, I enjoyed the time that I spent with it. And then I went out and mowed my real lawn. And then I came back in and played a little bit more of it.
Where were you going with that Mumford and Son things, partner? What were you talking about?
No, just like liking things, liking things that are bad and like knowing, hey, like when to pull back from it. Right.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with the Mumford boys.
Yeah. Like, and I'm talking about like back in 2011 when they were like a thing, and yeah.
Mumford and Embryos.
Yes.
Back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think before
Mumford and Sperm.
But before
Mumford trending with sperm. You make sense.
Yeah. This was back before like a real consensus solidified on them before they got really oversaturated, I feel like, you know, and my brother was like, hey, check this out. And I was like, okay, yeah, I like music that shares some of this instrumentation. That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just kind of like, well, I'm not going to pursue that anymore because I recognize how shallow that is. Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on to the topic, rapid fire, getting through some topics here. Just a real clarification. I don't know if we ever made this. It's the topics end up in the roundups, not because we think they are unworthy. The way we choose, here's a little bonus show question that no one asked. The way that we choose topics, for the main dispatch episodes is like 10 minutes before we record, we glance over them and see what resonates most with us at the time. It has nothing to do with like a rigorous evaluation.
Yes.
So if we talk about your topic in a roundup, it's not because we think it is worse or anything. This is just where we force ourselves to challenge ourselves to talk about what we maybe, you know, doesn't immediately sound great at the time we're recording the dispatch.
Yes.
Naveen, with a topic prompt. Are genres still a useful measure of describing games anymore? It seems like most games nowadays take from a hodgepodge of genres that is often difficult to classify them as any one thing. Deathloop, for instance, has elements of first-person shooters, roguelikes, immersive sims, and stealth games. In addition, some genres describe mechanics, like rhythm games, while others describe setting, like open-world games. Are these classifications still useful, and if so, how do you feel they contribute to gaming discourse? If not, what would you prefer take their place when describing a game?
I think you can get pretty far towards describing the bare bones of something just by using a compound genre. So like you, Naveen, you hit on a pretty good kind of distinction there, which is like genres that are, let's say, related to interaction models versus genres that are structural. And then you can throw in like subject matter genres, sci-fi, you know, gangster.
Sci-fi, roguelike, stealth.
Yes.
You know, describes the setting, the structure, and the primary interactive action thing.
Yeah. Open world, first person fantasy. Boom, you have Oblivion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You also have, though, in that, like, Battle Mage, Rise of the Lich or whatever, and Two Worlds, right? So, like, right. I think genre, what Naveen is getting to is the limits of genre, which there definitely are.
Yeah.
You know, they're a beginning of a conversation, not an end of a conversation. So like, I think of genre as a high level delineation thing, even if you add several qualifiers to it.
Yes.
I generally like roguelike fantasy action games. It doesn't mean I'm going to like every one of them, though. That doesn't tell me enough to know whether I'd like it.
Yeah.
It tells me enough whether it's worth taking a further look.
Yeah. It also depends, like, what are you choosing? Like, what is your criteria for this? Is it for taxonomy? You know, are you making your Steam library categories? You know, if you're playing that game, or are you trying to communicate with somebody about what this is? For the taxonomy, that ends up being a little bit trickier, and I think it gets down to like a gut. But like, if you're communicating with somebody, like the compound genre, and then it's like, you know,
adding another game in there is something that some people frown on, but I think is generally good.
I'm not asking you to assume their position, but what do they tend to frown on it about?
I'm kind of thinking about this in terms of people who were really cranky about Elden Ring drawing Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
Comparisons, because they were focusing on the differences and everything, and they're like, "Oh, it's nothing like that." And I'm like,
"Right,
it is a lot like that, and it's useful because everyone's played Breath of the Wild."
Yes.
Like the taxonomy thing, I think, is just going to get harder as games become more complicated,
mm-hmm.
and Katamari up more things.
Yeah.
And as we approach the Ubisoft singularity of, like, you know, every video game is Watch underscore Dogs.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of communication, it's very useful to use all your tools.
Yes.
Because the goal is to get somebody to understand what something is.
It's like giving an address, right? Okay. Country code.
Do cross streets as well.
Yeah, exactly. Cross streets. Oh, I'm on this between this and this. Or, you know, you got a state, a zip code, you know, city, street number, right?
Yeah. What is it? You know, like, what is it? Are you looking for this? You know, it's past the big sign. Things like that. Like, mm-hmm. use as much information as you can when describing something to a person.
Yeah.
You know, but it is getting less useful taxonomically. And to me, that's okay because I'm not that interested in that. Like, that's the highest level concern. Like, I don't really like wrestling games.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean there's never going to be a wrestling game I like, but it's not a mechanic I like. Mm-hmm. If you put that in the high level thing, I can pretty safely sort it in a not for me pile, which is fine.
Taxonomically, the mechanical side of it's way more important to me. There are other people who would probably say I would never touch anything sci-fi with a 10-foot pole. I'm a you know, sword and shield kind of person. I cannot put myself in their headspace. But, like, you know, again, when I'm categorizing Steam games, it's like, okay, this is horror. I don't care if it's, you know, a third person shooter horror game. I don't care if it's a first person. I chose the exact wrong example because that's a subject matter one. If something is open world, I don't care if it's, if it's Watch Dogs or if it's Sleeping Dogs. Right.
Yeah. As long as dogs are there.
As long as dogs are there. Doggies.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as little doggies get along.
Travis writes, I would love to hear you guys have a discussion about level design. Level design, what is it? What makes it good? What makes it shit? What are some of the best/coolest levels in your opinion, and why? Level design versus world design, what's the difference? How do the two things interact? And how/why/if that interaction is even important?
It's a very big question that is hard to do audio. Wise without examples.
It is.
I think it's also a thing that I will speak for myself. Like, I know what I likes. I'm in no means an expert at this. Like, there are people who study it and who are smarter than me.
Yeah.
Who are talking about this stuff. You know, in a general sense, like, good level design incorporates verticality, uses landmarks to orient the player. A lot of times is recursive.
Yeah.
You know, where you go back into spaces you've been and you see them from new angles or recontextualize them.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow they're complicated, like they have multiple avenues of approach and retreat, which increases kind of like tactical depth
mm-hmm.
of things. You know, in a general sense, those are things I think are good level design bits.
Yeah. I think that good level design will have a flow to it. Insofar as you can generally tell what the main avenues of progress are and what will be a side road, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think that something being difficult to navigate, it's more important that you get a sense for a complexity or an overwhelmingness than for it to actually be complex and overwhelming. Because mm-hmm. for me personally, one of my least favorite things in the entire world is being lost and not knowing how to go forward if I want to, you know?
Yeah.
Cause you know, everybody, for me, at least it's modal, right? It's I'm exploring because I want to see stuff. I want to either expand my net or go deeper in an area and okay, I want to go and see something new. You know, what is the horizon that I have to chase to go after that?
Yeah. Yeah. You end up with like Soul Reaver shit.
Yes.
Where just where you're supposed to go unclear,
mm-hmm.
you know, or like Castlevania 2, which we're doing for the show.
Yes.
Has that issue. Like mm-hmm. I love that game, but it isn't good with direction.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of important to the feeling. There's the devils in the details, like how it's executed,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then, world design, to me is like how that stuff fits together.
Yeah.
We're going to use Dark Souls as an example, because of course we are, but also because it does both excellently.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of the poster child for both.
Yeah.
The Undead Parish is a great level. Mm-hmm. There are multiple avenues of approach in most areas of it. There are a lot of little hidden secrets and crannies. Mm-hmm. It suggests something about the world. Narratively, it has a nice flow to it. You know where you're supposed to go. Mm-hmm. It also connects to other parts of the world in interesting and unexpected ways.
Yeah.
And which like lends that feeling of the world, but is also mechanically useful.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can use it as a hub to backtrack through and get to different places. Like Dark Souls does all this shit.
Yeah.
Really, really well. Who have resisted getting into those games, like I get it. But if you like video games and you like, you know, levels and game design and stuff, I think it's pretty essential.
Yeah.
For that stuff. And it's the main thing, a really great example of knowing when this is good is seeing when it's bad. And you can do that by comparing Dark Souls to like anything that's like Dark Souls,
including Gary's noted favorite game, Lords of the Fallen.
Yeah. My yearly annual replay. We're coming up on Fallen Fest 2022.
Mm.
In my apartment, me, Pocket, and Jessica are dressing up as our favorite Lords of the Fallen characters. But yeah, like Lords of the Fallen has shitty level design. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do any of those things, and the world design is incoherent.
Yeah.
And you can play those back to back and know exactly, like, feel mm-hmm. exactly what good level design is.
Yes.
In those, or like even, you know, Lord of the Fallen's easy, Whipping Boy, even like a good, like something people like it, there are games that don't concentrate on it. Mm-hmm. Like I think Nioh has really wretched level design.
Yeah.
But it doesn't care about level design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wants you to get into combat.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I don't disagree with your categorization of world design. I think that there's a little bit of disambiguation that probably needs to happen with it, because when I think of world design, I think of like things that happen, you know, that occur in like a world Bible, and that gets into, okay, like what like is being like lore, but also like what is being depicted here, you know, like using the level geometry and decoration, set design to tell a story. Things like that. Who lived here? What did they value? Things like that.
Yeah.
I think of world design as being more of an aesthetic thing. Your categorization of it, I think, is also useful and also could feasibly be called world design. So the only reason I bring that up is because my mind went one place first and your mind went another place first.
The only reason why I felt like that was what Travis meant by it was the like juxtaposition,
yes,
of them together. Mm-hmm. And I like the thing you're talking about, I also obviously care about. I just think it comes through in level design too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a level versus a world to me implies scale, not wireframe versus context.
Yes.
I guess.
Yeah.
But you know, depending on which one you mean,
And
that stuff, like that's a whole different question too. Like what makes that good stuff? Like, you know, I want for a good level design to have what you would call good world design. I want a space to feel functional.
Mm-hmm.
I want a sense of who lived there, what they did.
Yes.
What their values were.
Yeah.
What I don't want is a maze.
Yep.
You know, and that's the crummy part of it.
Mm-hmm. Especially given how common mazes are.
Yeah. They happen all the time. It's the JRPG dungeon trap.
Yes.
Where like this is just a maze, and then every once in a while maybe there's a sconce, but there's no landmarks, no sense of place, no sense of ecology. They just don't care about that. It's like Nioh, basically.
Yeah.
In that respect. It's just about the grind, and that sucks.
Yeah.
Douglas asks, if you ask people of a certain age what their formative gaming experiences were, they'd probably mention a Mario game. That was the case on a recent Retronauts, and it was the case for me too, even though I'd started playing games on the C64 before I played anything on the NES. Those games were fun, but I eventually put games down and moved on from the hobby. Years later, I'd sort of written off games as a diversion. I walked by my little sister playing Shining Force 2, and that second I was enchanted. I remember stopping dead in my tracks and sitting down to watch her play. The bright sprite work and battle transitions drew me in. When I saw the mechanics underlying it all, the tactics RPG aspect, and the characters in the story, I was hooked. I can honestly say that I would not be the same person I am today if I had not walked by my sister playing that game when I did in 1993. Anyway, topic suggestion. What are your formative gaming experiences? What made you realize that this diversion was actually something you dearly loved? Take it further. When did you realize that games were art? When did you realize that you wanted to do this as a career? Any other milestones along the way? Can you distill the reason you love video games into 15 words or less? No.
Nope.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I like them is because they're fun, and I've kind of always thought they were fun.
Yeah. It's the this is sick appeal.
Yeah.
It's the reason why some people get into comics or wrestling or anime or any, mm-hmm. you know, tabletop role-playing games. A lot of that stuff I think is literally formative. Like it's what mm-hmm. you get into as a kid, sports, yeah. you know, get into that stuff. Somebody around you when you're young introduced you to it, and some magic alchemy
yeah.
just made it click for you.
Yeah. So like literally formative experiences, just, you know, growing up and we had a Nintendo and I would just watch my brother play Mario all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I would desperately want to play and it took me forever to learn how to play. So like that's literally formative, but like probably more important was, I don't know, like real early days with my family and the SNES, like getting the Super Nintendo and spending a whole weekend playing Star Fox with my dad and brother were a big one, you know, because mm-hmm. like it was a huge surprise getting the Super Nintendo. Like working through Zombies at My Neighbors with my dad and brother, stuff like that. Like all of those big early ones were, you know, things experienced with other people. And I think like what turned me into a long timer with it was like reading about RPGs in magazines and like when I was in second grade or so, renting and just falling in love with Final Fantasy IV.
Yeah. There's like an element of when you're young, controlling something is another level of like media interfacing.
Yes.
That happens through video games. Like you learn to watch things and you learn to listen to things mm-hmm. very early, but then controlling something, like you do it with toys and action figures, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's like a magic to controlling the TV, like controlling the cartoon.
Yeah.
You know, and the cartoon doing what you want. Mm-hmm. That's really neat. Like it is a new dimension of interactivity that like, you know, it's kind of the reason, you know, when you get those stories like games are not just for basement dwelling nerds anymore. Like yeah. everybody plays games because it's the same way. Like I feel like everybody watches movies and everybody watches TV, mm-hmm. listens to music, you know, to varying degrees. Like you might be more casually into those things, but yeah. it's just a mode of interactivity to like put art in you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a new one. It was mm-hmm. a new one that came about.
Yeah. You know, I think especially for me, like as a kid, less important than just the interactivity, you know, just like a game where I could just move something around on the screen and press a button to make it a different thing. And I spoke a story over it would be, you know, kind of useless to me. And it mm-hmm. wouldn't be, you know, endlessly entertaining. I think that also the rule set in the world, like learning to adapt to that and figure it out and overcome it, not necessarily master it, but just, you know, how to get along and do cool shit inside of it. Yes. That was also incredibly important to me, you know, Hogan's Alley, not an especially good game, you know, NES light gun games, pretty limited, but like once I figured out like how to keep the cans up in the air by shooting them multiple times, oh, that's me doing some cool shit. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Cool stuff you can't do IRL.
Yeah.
You know, as simple as that, or as like going on a quest.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like there's a wish fulfillment element to it.
Yeah.
That is a big part of the fun. In terms of individual experiences, playing Atari with my family, in the 80s, like playing Joust and E.T. Mm-hmm. have very Mario Brothers, the non-super variety, have like very fond memories of that. And then getting a Super Nintendo and playing Mario Brothers, Mega Man 2, and Operation Wolf.
Oh, yeah.
As a kid,
yeah.
Getting an NES mm-hmm. as the three games I had.
Yeah.
Yeah, just very formative. I do not remember when I decided I wanted this to be a career. I remember listening to Retronauts,
yeah.
One of the first podcasts I listened to, and being like, these guys you know, are talking about stuff I like, and they have good opinions about it. And I would like to be that. Mm-hmm. Like, I would like to have people care about my opinions about this. I know what makes a game good or bad, you know, to me, like I can articulate that.
Yeah.
And then to start working on that. But did not necessarily think I was going to luck into this as a career.
Right.
That took me by surprise.
Yeah. So. I similar kind of thing. That wasn't Retronauts, but it was one up yours, one up FM. Other things, really just enjoyed listening to those. Obviously Retronauts was a big part of it as well, but just, those were the things I more closely emulated when I did, my radio show in college. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's, you know, listening to those shows and also having an interest in producing audio and video stuff, you know, just general media kind of things. I was like, oh, this is an interesting way to do those two things I love together. You know, and I thought I would be working in like television or film with the degree that I got. And it just turned out that this, you know, grew into its own thing while I was, you know, working marketing to pass the time.
Yeah. So yeah, do not know if that fully answers it, but I hopefully does.
Yeah. Sam writes, I'm currently trying to finish Resident Evil Village as soon as possible before listening to the new WAF episode. Oh boy, I'm sorry. This one's been sitting around so long. and it made me think about marathoning games in general. Are there any games, series, genres that you feel lend themselves to being played in irresponsibly long play sessions, especially if you beat the game and it's way, way past when you intended to go to sleep?
This is a thing that for me died with the job. Now I just do this for work.
Yeah.
It's very rare that I get sucked into something like this. Mm-hmm. Used to all the time. I have very distinct memories of like a magical summer, like my CRPG summer.
Yeah.
When I bought Walmart jewel disc versions of Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, Fallout 1 and 2, and Torment, played them over the summer. And I remember setting my alarm, like figuring out how little sleep I could get away with, you know, and then setting my alarm to get up and play.
Yeah.
I was unemployed, living back with my parents. I was like 20. It kind of ruled in retrospect. You know, this is about a 6 month. It was like a summer and a half.
Yeah.
That I did this. This was also my Team Fortress 2 clan days. Like, oh man, it's a very beautiful moment. But that's when I used to chug. Now if I chug, it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's because of work, because I've let something go too long.
Mm-hmm.
I try really hard not to chug, because we're too sensitive to criticism and people will be like, you only didn't like this because you had to chug it. And then I dedicated my life to making that not true because I'm a petty little monster boy.
I mean, I also don't chug because if I sit still for more than 2 hours, I get really, really antsy. You know, I now understand there are chemical reasons for that, but I don't like doing that. It just tires me out. It exhausts me and I start enjoying it less. And part of the freedom of doing this job and being able to be my own boss here is to decide like, oh, I can do stuff when I feel like it and I benefit from that, you know? You can move more units when you feel like doing it than if you try doing it when you don't. And I find
honey versus vinegar.
Yes. I find that I don't, that I don't move a lot of units if I am staying up all night. Also sleep matters too much to me to fuck with it anymore though. Yeah. Every summertime, whenever summer comes around, going back to the EverQuest discussion, I just like go back to that summer between eighth grade and ninth grade when I would play EverQuest until the sun came up.
Affection for it. Like, yeah. I hope that comes through in our voice too.
Oh, yeah.
I think that we both have a little nostalgia for it. We just, we don't cause we're old.
Yeah. It's just,
there is a romanticism to it though.
Mm-hmm.
Like LAN parties.
Oh God, LAN parties. Yeah. All of that's good. It's just for people younger than I am and I'm fine with that.
Yeah. A rotting bag of meat on the side of the road. That's getting sniffed by flies. Matthew Schaefer asks, long form prompt I'd like to see is a discussion of what indie developing has become. There are constantly indie games being added to every single digital marketplace that seems that the Meat Boys and Fezzes of the past are now so much harder to find as these special indie games in the piles of daily new releases. So this is a question that is, I think, sideways about discoverability.
Yeah, yeah.
For things, because we're still getting the Meat Boys and Fezzes in terms of like big indie games that are critical darlings, and mm-hmm. you know, like Tunic just came out that had that.
Yeah,
going for it. You know, Meat Boy at that point was a kind of established indie person, and that's not that different than say, like you're The Witness and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like that did come through in like tentpole indie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Inside.
Yeah, it is objectively true that there are more indie games being made. I feel like that is almost borderline useless to say. I also think that some of this is a little bit of an illusion of just the fact that like we know about like Meat Boy and some of those older indie titles in our minds looms especially large specifically because of the summer of arcade. I think that a little bit of that was like an illusion of marketing, right?
Mm.
Where like, oh, Braid. Why is Braid big and cool? Oh, it's because it was like hyped for a long time by Microsoft coming out. Like it was just like, yep, here's like a whole 2 months where like a big tentpole release is coming out and all of them are going to get airtime because Microsoft has deigned to say, hey, these ones are important for our platform, right? So yeah. I try to be mindful when I think, like, you know, when I start like good old dazing about it, because how much of that was actually how much like, in, you know, of this like big tentpole indie stuff was actually just made possible because of the largesse of an extremely non-indie force, which is platform owner marketing. Right.
Yeah. 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 It's you got to be careful about good old dazing almost anything.
Yeah.
You know, this is undeniably a good thing that there are way more indie games being made mm-hmm. and that it's not just certain ones that are breaking through.
Yes.
It puts more work on the consumer mm-hmm. because you have to do your own curation and seek that out. But it's a net good because more people are being able to make games and there is more of a like designer, like, it's creating a dev middle class, mm-hmm. like the working dev middle class, which is yeah. really good.
Mm-hmm.
These are all things I think are good for yeah. the art form and generally, you know, unalloyed good for the world. It just makes more work for me and I'm yeah. okay with that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I'm, you know, a core cornerstone of my personality is I'm at peace with not being able to get all, you know, play all the Meat Boys and Fezzes
mm-hmm.
that come out. Like we've passed that opportunity. I will die before I get to do all of them. So
yeah.
The choices I make are important, but they're never going to be comprehensive.
Yeah.
It's okay if I miss shit.
If it's FOMO that is driving you to think like, hey, there might be a Meat Boy that I'm missing out on, lean on your community, you know, to mm-hmm. a degree. And also like if you miss out on something big, whatever, it'll probably be reissued at some point in the near future. So it's going to come back around. Just if you're looking for something, grab the next thing that passes you by and hold on to it. You know,
or you'll play something else instead.
Yes.
You know, and that'll be okay. You know, you'll just miss out on that experience, but you'll have other experiences instead.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, FOMO is a real insidious, unhealthy idea, I think.
Yeah.
Like it's a good thing to try to kill in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't think it leads to good outcomes.
Right.
In a general sense. So, yeah. And the other thing that is part of this, I think, is that we're getting so many superstar indie things that the line is getting pretty blurred
yeah.
between them. Like, I feel like back during the Meat Boy and Fez era, indie was like a totally siloed thing.
Yeah.
And now we're getting things that are like arguably indie.
Yeah.
You know, we just did Vampyr for the show. Is that an indie game?
Mm-hmm.
No. You know, Don't Nod's a real company, but they're not EA. They're not.
Yeah.
You know, it's a middle class game. Like we're getting a wider strata.
Yeah.
Of kind of developer weights.
Yeah. If I'm exchanging like higher visibility for whatever the next Meat Boy is for the fact that we have Devolver Digital, yes. I'm gonna take Devolver Digital.
Same. Yeah, 10 times out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah. We're coming up on an hour. Want to do one more and then wrap it up?
Let's do one more.
Yeah. Let's hear. Eli writes. Topic prompt, themes. Theming is easily the core of artistic expression. Great movies, TV shows, books, and even albums tend to keep a strong theme in mind, especially if the core narrative is being included as part of the work. What themes do you enjoy seeing in games specifically? What themes do you think work poorly or are overdone? Maybe most interestingly, what do you think makes for a good theme specifically within the medium of video games?
We talked about this a lot around this, but I think that a good theme for video games are things that can be enforced or strengthened through interactivity.
Yep.
So a theme that weight is added to it by making the player do something or experience something more directly than you would through a passive experience.
Yeah.
You know, if I have to make the sacrifice, the theme of what sacrifices are worth it, if I have to actually feel that sacrifice, that's something that you can only really do in a video game, and makes that theme stronger and better suited to games.
Yeah, specifically around the idea of sacrifice, thinking about like anything related to choice, as broad as that is, you know, basically, let's say consequence, anything that is related to consequence and the doors that are shut when you open one door, you know, end up being pretty good. That doesn't just need to be, you know, narrative. It can also be, you know, play wise. I do not get to do this mission because I did this other one, because I sided with these people, because et cetera. You know, I think that those tend to do anything, you know, within that kind of neighborhood tends to work pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of themes, I think are kind of dead. A vaguely environmentalist theme.
Yeah.
I think is a little bit dead. Obviously that has more weight because of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, but the kind of quaint 90s like life stream environmental theme, yeah. Final Fantasy 7-esque version of it, just doesn't hit the same without the like actual imminent apocalypse
right
that we're facing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also it's just kind of like it's uncontroversial in any way. Like, we all know that's the right answer.
Yeah.
So it ends up flattening the experience to champion what is clearly the right answer, and everyone who's worth a damn agrees is the right answer.
Yeah. It's like, nobody's on the other side of this is what I want to say, but no, just
there are people on the other side. Yeah.
Powerful people on the other side of it, but they're not right.
They're not worth thinking about. They're not thinking.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but it ends up making that error. I think about this was very formative now that I think about it, but my speech class in high school, they're like, you cannot do an anti-hunger.
Yeah.
Persuasive speech, because nobody wants hunger. Like, everyone's against that. And theoretically, even these chuds are actually against climate apocalypse. They just, you know, if they were just pressing a button and had to give nothing up, they'd say, nah, they just don't think they're going to have to deal with the consequences, which they won't because they're rich.
Yep.
So that's something I'm sick of seeing. And then I'm very sick of the power of friendship. That's not just for Gary anime reasons. I just think that friendship is great. It's really, really nice. I think we've gotten enough, you know, you can still do a character portrait of a relationship.
Yeah.
And that's something I want a lot more of, like two characters that you are getting the depth of their friendship, like a Harry and Kim Kitsuragi kind of thing. Like, that's about their friendship. And I think that does it really well.
Yeah.
What I don't want are really broad pastiche characters that I'm just told they're friends.
Yeah. It's like,
you know,
aren't we a real mix and match crew? You know, you wouldn't think we would get along together, but in fact, we only got through because we stuck together. Yeah.
Yeah. Show me what they like about each other.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can see, Disco Elysium kind of spoils the curve because it's really good. But one of the differences between that, you know, you watch that and you get to see that growing respect.
Yeah.
Happen. Over the course of hundreds and hundreds of words.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to abstract a relationship by giving you an archetype and just telling you what happens.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I really like. That incorporates the power of friendship, but it's not just about it.
Yeah.
Friendship is nice is not a good enough theme.
No, it needs to be, it needs to be an accessory to something else, because I mean, Disco Elysium is also like about community, right?
Yeah. It's about lots of things because it's really rich.
Yeah.
Cause it has writing that supports that kind of depth, which doesn't always happen.
It does not. Pretty over cycles.
Yeah. So cycles are rough because a lot of my favorite games do it, but also
Yeah, come on. It's just we've been treading that ground for a while. You know, it's just I don't care for it. When that popped up in Children of Morta, I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, there's an element of like, yeah, just, and it's not even its fault.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's just the, you know, it's what have I wrought?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because it's just staked out territory.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to think of other like very specifically dead themes because obviously the articulation matters, but
yeah. I mean, it's a popular punching bag. You know, dad games, like things I'd like to see more of are just like different kinds of relationships. You know, I'll always be a fan of the brother, you know, of the either brother or sister. You know, not a lot of like mother daughter kind of games. Yeah,
mother daughter game would be cool to see.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like the dad games. I don't want to have a ward. I also don't want to be a ward.
Yeah,
I think I'm a little bit over the parent child relationship.
Yeah,
as a game focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like father figures.
Yeah,
you know, as a thing. Like I'm okay with.
I want a game about being an uncle. I can do good at that.
That would end up being too tender core Froghouse. But if you somehow did it in a way that incorporated it, that wasn't just like an itch.io visual novel, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
Like the essence of avuncular hood, yeah. Infinite avuncular, you know, the Devil's Rift, Tokyo Future Sight.
yeah. Oh man, oh man. Yeah, but ultimately I don't know, I guess all of this kind of gets down to like I am mostly interested in themes about folks.
Yeah, yeah. Relationships, like yeah. You know, you talked about brothers and stuff, like what about and we have a couple good games about friends where the friendships actually seem lived in, like there aren't that many but there are some. Mm-hmm. You know, but what about like relationships between like I was thinking, like I obviously care about this, but like bandmates, that's a very specific, or a creative partnership is a very specific kind of relationship that hasn't been explored to any degree in gaming. I think that like an individual romantic relationship is something that's really tricky, because everybody does kind of the meet cute, and then and this is not games, this is in media generally as well, we're just kind of told that these people love each other without seeing what they like about each other.
Yeah.
But like once you get past that initial falling in love moment, there's a lot that happens in relationships.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And it's something that like, I mean, again, I don't want an itch.io visual novel tender core version of it.
Yeah.
But like, what if you did a game that was an RPG and the two main characters were a married couple?
Yeah.
You know, and you had to deal with their relationship, like lived in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's really cool and just unexplored territory that's more complicated than like, boy, we should probably take care of the planet.
Yeah.
You know, no shit.
I like themes where the stakes are lower, you know, story. I think that is the way to make it interesting. Like even if something as apocalyptic as a pathologic, right? Like that is, you know, to the scope of a town, you know, like it is like one particular place, as opposed to something that can, you know, slip the bonds and, you know, hit everybody. Right.
I'm very surprised people can still get a lot out of really grandiose save the world plots. Like there's just not a limit to the appetite.
Yeah.
For a bunch of plucky kids fighting God and saving the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just like, you don't want another kind of story at that point.
Please. Yeah.
Yeah. I would like another kind of story.
I like other kinds of stories.
Yeah. I think it'd be cool to get a greater variety of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I'm also team, like that variety does exist. It's just the discoverability and effort.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I also want games. I want the genre variety as well. Mm-hmm. I don't just want these to be like, you can play an itch.io visual novel, walking sim style game about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has made it. I want people to wrestle with mechanics and use the gameness.
Yeah.
You know, go into that first part of this question, like use the things that only game can do to explore some of these other relationships.
Yes. Yeah. Not to say that the expression of those itch.io walking sims or, you know, Twine games are less valid. It's just personal appeal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I want both. You know, like sometimes I'm in the mood for a really light narrative experience. Sometimes I'm in the mood for that thing that only games can do, which is that interaction between play and, yeah, you know, story or narrative or theme. And I want a wider variety of the second, yes, category, because the first category is very appropriately and justly, virtuously covered.
Yes.
I think. Thanks, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you next quarter. Thanks for supporting us.
Yeah, we'll see you next quarter. We, you know, slowly surpass the like, you know, for certain categories, we stay caught up and even dig into the backlog. But every little bit helps. If we haven't gotten to your question yet, I know that there are a bunch of them. We apologize. It's just time works. Time works against us getting to them all.
Yes, and it's a bummer. But yeah, we appreciate your patience. Thanks for supporting us. No ad, no need for ad, and you're already doing the stuff.
Yeah. Just check out other stuff that you have access to.
Yeah. And be safe.
Please do.